Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Conversation About the Men, where my guest is Youngblood. I hope you enjoy this episode. So the first thing that I want to say is, can I call you Dominic?
You can call me Dominic if you want. It's what my mum calls me when I'm naughty, but yeah, you can.
Is that going to like trigger you and you're going to feel like there's something
it's
wrong?
All right. I'm kind of interviewing triggered a bit today.
Okay. But... All right. Good. Then we'll do that. I'll call you Dominic.
I love it. I'm down.
I understand you just did 3 shows on Sunset Strip, which is fucking crazy. What on earth possessed you to do 3 shows on the Strip in one night?
I don't know. I think I just wanted a moment. Like, I love chaos. I love chaos in the name of love. You know what I mean? I was always into it. I grew up on bands like The Clash, The Damned, Joy Division. I think it was always about culture for bands like that and how they affected it and how they did things that made people turn their heads. And I don't know, an idea just got suggested. I was like, what about you play 3 shows in one night? And I was like, right then, okay, I'm down to do that. But I literally want to walk across the street in between the shows and change the gear and carry the drum kits and take the crowd from one venue with me.
So you were your own roadie as well?
Basically, I was carrying my guitar and then carrying... I just wanted it to just be real and nuts and crazy and unhinged. I think that's what I really get a kick out of. You know what I mean? I think... Because now in my life, I loved rock and roll music. I've always loved rock and roll music. I got brought up on it. I was brought up on Iggy and Oasis and the Stones and Madonna, and it all felt so real and so just like...
Authentic.
Authentic, man. I think that's the thing though, isn't it? It's like, how does your music last over time? I think in a world of trends and where everything is so kind of here one minute, then gone the next, like time and what it does to culture and what it does to people is the most beautiful thing in the world. And I think like a night like that, it felt like we were bringing something into the world that hadn't necessarily been there before. And I think like you can't really say that a lot nowadays.
You can't. I was thinking that when you were speaking, I was thinking, how often is it that you have an experience that someone hasn't done before? You know, it's so rare. Everything's been done. And so to have that moment when I was watching video footage of how people were responding to that, I just thought it's just so epic. And like you said, chaotic as well.
I just love it, man. I love chaos. It's kind of everything I represent. It's like chaos in the name of love. I always say that. Like, I've got like 2 black heart tattoos on my finger, on my middle fingers, which is like that defiant love, that love and that defiant fight that you have to get to obtain love nowadays. You know what I mean? I think I wanted to start this thing.
There's a difference between defiance for the sake of defiance. And I think that feels very different to defiance with the objective of love.
Fully. I think that's what kind of why rock and roll and punk rock feels so different now. Because when it first came around in the 70s, it was literally like an anti-fascist riot against an oppressive government, an oppressive monarchy. And I think now it's like people are defiant because they want to be loved and they want to be accepted. I think when I first started writing music and finding Youngblood, it was on the crash of a generational wave where it was like 6 months before I kind of started to break, in inverted commas, whatever that means. It was like people were saying, you can't sing about politics, you can't sing about sexuality, you can't dress like that, you can't wear that.
Why? Who gave you those messages?
It was hilarious. It was everyone in the industry. Everyone that kind of came across me in music was a little bit frightened of me. And I've always kind of carried that with me because I think people don't really like the truth, do they? You know what I mean?
No, they don't. They don't. And they do try to oppress and silence people who do speak up for the truth. But let me ask you a question. So people were afraid because you were not adhering to those principles and those rules, which is just like, shut up. And what did they want you to be?
Oh, dude, I think a lot. It's so interesting. A big misconception around me and my community is that it's all kind of thought up in a boardroom. And it's
like you're like some construction of like a Simon Cowell band or something.
Construction of something when it's so
full. Oh, okay.
It would be so beautiful for people to see what actually happens on a day, even on a daily basis now with me. You know, I mean, I think it's always coming from me and my best mates. And I remember in the early days, it was like, you have to adhere to relationships to be seen anywhere. And the thing that was beautiful, I think, and I was excited to come around artists like Lil Peep and Billie Eilish and Lil Nas X, artists like that, and I think myself, we kind of really told that mentality to fuck off, because it was almost like the press couldn't break us, the press couldn't stop us, the press, we didn't have to do anything. All we had to do was look into an iPhone and tell the truth. I think what happened to me was when I started to put up my iPhone and go, hello, I don't feel heard. I don't feel like I have the right to talk. I don't feel like I have the right to be seen. Does anybody else feel like that? And then bang, it was just.
Yeah, because so many people feel like that. They really genuinely do. What you're talking about is removing the middleman of the press, being able to create the narrative about you. And once you were like, yeah, fuck that, I'm not adhering to that narrative, I'm going to speak to people directly and be who I am, that is when people discovered the truth of who you are. And that's when it went, it's so crazy.
What's wild to kind of talk about, which I don't really talk about a lot, is like, a narrative that's written by another person about me is almost more damaging to me than actually kind of knowing me, which almost works the way around, because you find artists through narrative, a trend and a thing. It's almost like people have always like said, oh, Youngblood's a punk, or Youngblood's a thing. It's like, well, I've never said or ever tried to do anything other than just be me and encourage other people to be themselves. So it's a really interesting thing. Sometimes I'm just like, I don't know, don't call me anything, please tell people to come to my show, because then they'll figure it out for themselves, you know what I mean? I think, or see it live, or come see the community. I think that's the most interesting part.
I read that you were diagnosed with ADHD, and you know, I'm very familiar with that. Traditional school does not know what to do with brains that are hyper-focused on one thing. And they think they try to drill it into you, there's something fucked up and wrong about you, when actually it's brilliant, it's beautiful. It allows you to learn and become like obsessed with something and master it and be super passionate about something. And there's so many misconceptions about ADHD. And I'm wondering how it was for you growing up with it. And what did the school system do with you?
It's so bizarre to compartmentalize a human being,
right?
I just think it's such a crazy thing. I still don't understand it, and that's why I almost believe artistically that's why I'm here. I want to devote my art to making people feel, if they've ever felt boxed or put into one place, that they don't have to adhere to a man-made idea that doesn't mean anything anyway. You know what I'm saying?
But you know why it is, though. You know why people do it? So that they can have some kind of notion of control.
Absolutely. And I think, like, I always say, I remember meeting a young kid in a meet and greet, and his name was Ruben, in London, when we were doing a signing, and he was young, and he looked, you know what I mean? He had the pinstripes on and looked exactly like me. His parents, like, he was struggling through school, and everyone, he was hyperactive, and everyone didn't understand the way he dressed and didn't understand the way he was. And it was so crazy for me, because I was so tired. I've been promoting the album, and then somebody just smacks you in the face like that, and you look at someone who is literally almost a reflection of you as you were. And this conversation in my life wasn't had. And it was almost like a mental moment. And I remember looking at him and I was like, they are terrified of your individuality. They are terrified of your imagination. They're terrified of, people don't like things they don't understand or don't don't have a sense of control over. I think the thing about it is I find it fascinating to meet somebody I don't understand. I find it.
Oh my God, so do I. I live for it. I love it.
You know what I mean? To meet someone who's completely thinks in a different way to me. That's why I love collaborating with artists or having a conversation with people, because I'm like, how the hell did you get from there to there?
It's like, fascinating, isn't it? Yeah, that's how we learn.
I would have gone a completely different way. I would have gone a completely different route. And I was just, I just said to someone like that, I was like, I promise you, it will be all right in the end, because what they will teach you through, they will teach you so much through their ignorance. You will learn so much through ignorance. You know what I mean?
Oh, but you know, and that's so beautiful. You probably changed the course of his life that he got to have that conversation with you, and that somebody saw him and recognized him and said, "Hey, I see you. I value you." The trick is that culture hopefully doesn't do such a fucking number on that kid that he'll make it through to the other side.
Yeah, because it was so funny because he kind of changed the course of mine, because that woke me up and went, oh, I kind of had a cuddle with me when I was 13 inside myself through that conversation. You know what I mean?
Aww.
That's what I love about music. That's what I love about Youngblood. That's what I wanted it to be about. It was never about have it like from the beginning having it records or just like me song on the radio. I was always so much more interested in finding people and almost being something and being a community that people didn't understand instantly, that would live with you and get bigger and bigger and bigger. And
well, that's what's happening.
Yeah,
but did you, I can imagine that maybe as a kid you did not have that. Were your parents supportive?
It was interesting because my old man had a guitar shop, you know what I mean? So I literally would go into the shop and play songs, and my mum...
You just picked it up and learned, or did he teach you?
My dad don't play guitar, which is crazy. You know what I mean? My dad's
obsessed. But he had a guitar shop.
My dad had a guitar shop, but he's obsessed with him. It's so weird. He's like, you give my dad a guitar, and he's like, knows what year it was made, what color it is, how many drugs have been sniffed off it, whatever. You know, actually knows everything about it, but he's never played it. And I was really into playing.
It's interesting.
And my mum was always, my mum loved me wearing makeup and dyeing my hair. And it was almost the world didn't. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, interesting, so yeah.
While it was almost school or a youth leader or the government. But then like...
Especially in Doncaster. We're not talking about anywhere. We're talking about Doncaster.
That's what I'm saying. It was so weird. Like Doncaster's like, I don't know, for people in America or...
Yeah, what's the equivalent?
Boise or...
Boise, Nebraska, Idaho, yeah.
Nebraska or something like that. And it was so crazy because, I don't know, I think I had a level of expression, but I grew up in a family business and it was really turbulent in my house. So they let me be who I was.
What do you mean it was turbulent?
It was turbulent. There was a little, like, there was a little bit of a, like, quite a bit of domestic abuse and all that stuff, you know what I mean, growing up. So it was like...
From your mum to your dad or your dad to your mum?
Between both of them, you know what I mean?
Right.
It was...
A lot of rage.
Yeah, quite a lot of anger, but also a lot of love. So when I explain my story...
Often one goes with the other. One doesn't cancel out the other.
It was so bizarre, and it gave me such a crazy relationship with love. And I think kind of my story is quite, on paper, hard to understand, but actually in real life, it's the most relatable because, you know what I'm saying? On paper, it's like not a glamorized story of... It was violent and it was unsupportive, and the pain went hand in hand with love, and that was a concoction of confusion my whole life, and that's why I wrote music. You know what I mean?
And you also could pick love relationships where that feels very normal to you. By the way, I know Jessie Jo, your girlfriend, since she's 1 year old, and I spoke to her last night when I realized that actually you were dating Jessie. I sent her a text at 11 o'clock last night, like, Jessie, I think I'm interviewing your boyfriend tomorrow. But yeah, I wonder how that does play out for you in relationships.
When I met Jessie, I think she's just so real.
She is. She's the real deal. She's legit. She's authentic.
Like, You know what I mean? Just authentic. And I think kind of, she always says she sees a lot of that in me. So I think she's really good with me because I am a million people in one day and I'm a million moods and ADHD as fuck and quite traumatized. Yet she's so grounding and almost is like an all-seeing eye. Whereas I see nothing 360. I see completely right in front of my eyes, but my head moves. Whereas she sees all around her, but her head stays still. So it really...
Well, that's a really interesting analogy, actually. And it's true. Like, if you grew up in chaos, which so many of us did, I did too. And I have that interesting relationship to love that is both, you know, extremely destructive and also super loving and passionate, but also has that very chaotic, you know, violent background too. When you partner up with someone that doesn't have that, it's really interesting to see like, oh, people that don't come from trauma have a whole different experience of love, you know, and I found it really grounding to have that actually.
Yeah, I just think she's just so real and so pragmatic and so honest, you know what I mean? And it's like, because she knows herself.
Mm.
You know what I mean? There's no insecurity, you know what I mean? There isn't, obviously, there is in all of us, but she's strong as fuck emotionally, and it's pretty wild. You know what I mean?
I saw something you posted that said that you love hot moms, yes. Which, by the way, thank you.
Of course,
I identify as a hot mom.
You are a hot mom.
Yeah, thank you. I'm all about the MILF, so I was really excited when I saw that.
That MILF shape down, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. So where did that come from, that you love hot moms?
To be honest, what's crazy, I've always dated older women. I don't know why.
Really? Why is that?
I don't know. I think I'm pretty crazy. I haven't really thought about it. I just have done that, you know what I mean? I just think maybe an emotional maturity that I can learn from. I think I love, you know what I mean? I love women. I love learning from women. Women know everything. You know what I'm saying? It's like, whoa.
Oh, I'm so pleased you know that. You know, I'm so pleased that you know that.
Emotional depth that's just like, oh my God, I have to steal this. I have to know this. You know what I mean? It's just like, I just love conversations with women. I always had a lot more girlfriends than I had boyfriends, you know what I mean?
I can see that.
Both in my sexuality too as well, you know what I mean? I've had a couple of everything, but like, I don't know, I really connected deeply with femininity and I don't know, emotional depth. I love emotional people because I'm really empathetic as well.
So when I was researching you, I read that you had struggled with depression and I wanted to talk to you. Are you comfortable if I ask you some questions about this?
Of course, man. Absolutely.
All right, cool. So you had said that at one point you had felt suicidal in your life.
Yeah.
And I wanted to say that I'm really sorry that you had that experience. And yet I'm sure that when you were facing the abyss on the other side of it, you learned so much about yourself. Would that be accurate?
It's so crazy. It's like literally when you have that, I was saying this last night, it was like when you get that feeling of what would it be like if I wasn't here, you learn so much about yourself. And I write about it. It's a lot in my music. I've always thought, what would it be like if I'm not here? And I think I thought it more and more the bigger I got, you know what I mean, as an artist, if you like. I just think when the world, I think the subculture of Youngblood got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. A community that was so profoundly founded on love and acceptance and beauty bled into a mainstream that when the eye comes on you, that's when hate starts to permeate it and almost like a question.
It gets projected onto you.
Yeah, it gets projected onto an innocent thing. It's always easy to prey on the innocent because it's unstained and it won't fight back because it doesn't know how to yet. You know what I mean? And I think with this album, like when everything gets a little bit bit stained, you learn how to combat it. And I almost was like, I look at artists like Mac Miller and Lil Peep as incredible artists for my generation who taught me so much about myself and about my ideas of the world. And they didn't make it. And it as an artist, it leads you to believe like, well, what if I wasn't here? Would people see past the surface level perception of what I may be? Would people fall into my world and maybe understand what I had to give to the world? You know what I mean? And I know it's a stupid thought, but it's not a stupid thought.
It's not at all. But I'm just wondering, how did you move out of that space into, and I'm assuming, and I haven't even asked you about how your mental health is today, but I'm assuming it's in a different place.
Yeah, I think like I always kick the bear. The bear's biting me, I'm going to fucking bite it back. I'm going to bite it right on the ear. I just always have felt like that. You know what I mean? I think when I have something to kick against, even if that's myself, I work better than ever.
It's survivor instinct. You are not going to fuck me up. I'm going to fucking take you down and get through it.
I spoke to a therapist about that, and they said, well, you've grown up in turbulence your whole life, so you thrive in a war zone. You thrive in a
chaotic environment, chaotic conflict.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you thrive in conflict, and it's pretty crazy and pretty weird, but like.
No, I understand it. That's how I am too. I mean, I do really well in a crisis. It really motivates me. It gets me moving forward. So do you continue with therapy?
Yeah, I always think like it's important to talk about it. That's what I say. I always say the thing that helped me was being able to express myself and talk about my feelings and talk about the way I am, you know, and I think every time you talk, you learn as you talk. Like I've said some things today that I've never said before and will take with me. I think if you talk without filter, without censorship, and you can find someone you can do that to who's completely neutral and is not going to judge you, I think you can
most freeing thing. Yeah. It's the most freeing thing. It's such an incredible thing to be able to do, to be able to share the truth of who you are with someone that doesn't judge you at all. I was actually really interested to read that you talked in an interview with Attitude magazine in 2019 and another time in 2020 about being pansexual and polyamorous. And I wanted to talk to you a bit about that. So what does it mean to you to be sexually fluid?
I just think it's not about, I think it's all about a person for me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I fall in love with, I think that's what love's about. I think love should allow your partner or people you meet to change. I think love should be about your sexuality changing if you want it to as well. I just think there should be no barriers. I think you just love whatever you love. That's the thing for me. I'm so attracted to people. I don't mind if
what star sign are you?
Leo.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I mean, it's like I love whatever they got, even if they want to change. I think it's
by the way, that's the biggest gift you can give anyone, because people get in a relationship and they don't want them to change. There's something I read that you said about olives that I fucking loved. Right? I love it so much. You said you've got to lose yourself in a load of people to figure out who you are sexually. Fuck me, bruv. 2 years ago, I fucking hated olives. Now I love olives.
That's what I'm saying.
I loved it so much.
I swear to God, that was, bruv, honestly, I did. I just didn't fucking like olives. I was like, anywhere, not my vibe. You know what I mean? Put them in my fucking drink. Ew. Put them on a pizza. Ew. Put them on a fucking bar. Ew.
I feel about olives.
But then I ate more olives and I'm like, oh, fucking love olives. Now, if I'm at an Italian restaurant, someone brings a fucking olive out, I'm like, yes.
But this quote was in relation to sexuality, which I thought was really honest and beautiful. So can you give me what that
was? That was it. It was like, if people teach you the sky is green your whole life, you're going to think it's green until you realize for yourself that it's blue.
Of course.
You know, I mean, I came from a place where sexuality was ridiculed, right? So I wasn't even
or maybe heterosexual sexuality was what was supported, and anything outside of that was ridiculed.
Yeah, that was it. It was like heterosexual sexuality was like, that's what you are. And then if you kind of like someone like me was like looking around going, oh, maybe I could do that. Maybe that could, oh, whoa. And then I loved Lou Reed and I loved Bowie and I loved Jagger and I loved Gaga and I loved Madonna. And it was all this, I loved artists who were sexual. I loved sex. I loved the idea of communication and
communication and, through sex as well.
Really, expression and I loved sex. And then I went down to London and left the small town and I had this freeing experience where I was allowed to kind of experiment and try and realize that love and understanding between people is one of the most beautiful things in the world. And I think it's cool as fuck. And literally like that idea of don't knock it till you try it, I think is like, is literally amazing. I love sensation. I love sensation when it comes to food, when it comes to stage, when it comes to sex. I love feeling. And I don't think feeling should be censored. I think it should be.
And not binary and not again, going back to the beginning of our conversation, people make things binary and put them in a box so they can understand and control it.
Absolutely. I think there's been a very big sexual revolution, you know what I mean, in terms of gender identity and sex that is moving really quickly, you know what I mean? And I think a lot of people are frightened to kind of be like align with that idea because you can be wrong about something or someone a week after you were right about it. But I think as long as you mean it with love and as long as you are willing to understand people, you know what I mean, you won't get burnt for it. You know what I mean? I think that's why like fucking cancel culture, it makes me laugh. You know what I mean?
Why?
I think it's a foundation built on ignorance as well as it is.
And talk about control. Control. Oh my God.
At the end of the day, it's like, for example, if you've done something wrong, fuck you. But if you make a mistake that's like an honest mistake in terms of love, don't drag someone for it. You're just as bad as fucking the people who deserve to be fucking cancelled.
And by the way, how the fuck is anyone going to learn about anything without making mistakes? That's how we learn.
Absolutely. It fucks me off that it's like people are terrified to make a mistake now. It just like, I'm like, shut up, man. What are you talking about? You know what I mean? It's like, and I've almost played into it now. I'm like, fucking come and cancel me then because you just sound like a twat. You just sound like an idiot. You know what I mean? And I'm like, I get turned on by playing into a narrative that, again, the bear's trying to fucking bite me. So I'm going to bite you back. You know what I mean?
You know, it's interesting though. Do you think that culture is changing at all? Because we're talking about like gender more expression of, you know, what's considered a gender norm. We're talking about cancel culture. These are things that I think enough people are fed up with binary terms. Enough people are fed up with cancel culture and being, you know, controlled. Well, ultimately, we're talking about control, right? And removing some of that control. Do you think that things are shifting in the right direction?
I think everyone's gonna start holding on not as tightly because people bite back. I think like all my friends, like I was literally talking to a makeup artist who was non-binary yesterday, or they are very much they identify as they because it makes them feel the most comfortable. They're like and my favorite thing about them is they say call me anything. I prefer they, but call me anything because I don't want to adhere to an idea of gender, but I am comfortable enough that people can ask me or can get it wrong. If you get it wrong 7 times, fuck you, because I've told you what it is. But if you call me something that I don't want to be called, I'll correct you. But I understand that gender is but a concept. So I just think it's like, it's, you got to just kind of move with it and then work with the people, you know what I'm saying? And then it's like, I think they put it so beautifully yesterday. I was like, hell yeah. You know what I mean? I think, and mm-hmm. it makes me think about my gender and go, you know what? I fuck with that. I relate to that because, you know what I mean? I think I love the neutrality of it. I love the,
yeah. It's almost like a blank canvas. It's like, it's just it's permission to be whoever the fuck and whatever the fuck you are.
That's what I fucked with yesterday when they said that to me. They said like the neutrality of it, it doesn't have a preconceived notion of how to be. And that's fucking cool.
It is. It really is. Okay, I want to talk to you about lad mentality because I love that, again, that you have said, you know, you've spoken about the need to smash the shit out of lad mentality that is so vastly accepted, which, you know, I am fully on board with. So what aspects of that mentality are you specifically talking about?
I think everything. I think like my whole life I was always really empathetic. I was always
empathetic.
Like emotional, you know what I mean? And I got ridiculed for that my whole life. And again, it was only ridiculed at me by fear. And I didn't want to be angry at them. I wanted to be like, yo, I know that you, like, I think a lot of my friends struggle to be emotional. And that is not
something that boys are raised in traditional culture to be. They're raised to deny their feelings.
That's what I'm saying.
It's a big fucking problem teaching a whole gender to not feel.
Absolutely. I think that's what I'm saying. And I wanted to kind of, especially in my music, talk about that and say like, yo, if you are out there and you're feeling anxious, you're feeling depressed, you're feeling confused, you're feeling angry, you're feeling sad, you're feeling happy, you're feeling, it means you're working. It means your body is actually working. It means you're alive.
Yeah, you're where you should be.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like you are not an alien. You are exactly, you know what I'm saying? You are exactly beautiful, and even if you are an alien, that's fucking fine too. You know what I mean? It's everything. Like it's that idea. It's, I just think like, and those, so that suppression can lead to violence and hate.
Well, it does. It does, because those feelings have to go somewhere, and they come out sideways.
That's what I'm saying. They come out sideways, and choosing ignorance and choosing hate is something that I want. That's the biggest battle I'm against. That my biggest fight is against hate. My biggest fight is against hate of any kind. And I wanted to destroy that. I wanted to say that this mentality that we raise a gender on is fucked up, and we need to make a change to it.
Well, look, in many ways, the traditional concepts of masculinity have been completely shattered over the last 5 years, thank God. But now we've got the task of rebuilding it, right? And I think it's really important to have men's voices be loud at this time, because if men's voices aren't the ones reconstructing it, who the fuck is?
I think it's time for fucking, again, it's time for everyone to be fucking loud. And it's like, it's, again, I think that's what's beautiful in this world. Like people's voice, I wanted through Youngblood. Youngblood gave me a voice. Youngblood is, I believe, like my culture, my movement, just an idea. Youngblood's an idea. That's what my mum was like when I first started. She's like, you can't be called that when you're 50. I'm like, yeah, I can, because it's actually an idea.
Okay, Dominic, I want to talk to you about speaking up. I will say that the Me Too movement has certainly not really had a place, or not had a place. The music industry has not had the cultural reckoning that the rest of the world has. I'm still on tour, and I still see security picking girls out, the cute girls out in the front row. I still see it going on, right? So I love to see that you were throwing a guy out of your concert for shoving a woman. Thank you for doing that. But what are your rules for the road? How do you talk to your band? Do you have a protocol on the road where you're like, hey, here's the rules, everybody?
Foley, there's a massive respect. Our tour.
What's the young blood rider for being on tour?
Our tour manager is a feisty fucking Scottish woman who does not
love it.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's so important for me to implement that because, like, I don't see shit. Because when you're on stage, right, as a singer or an artist or if you're on stage, my ears are out, my senses are, my ears are blocked by in-ears and music.
Yeah.
The venues are so big now, everyone looks like a blur. There's smoke, there's lights, there's fire, there's everything going on.
Yeah, you're in the zone.
I'm saying that's like, I always in my head have, I look out, people see, if you come to my show, I'm always like, stop, push back, stop the song, security, blah, 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 because that's just the culture I'm from. You know what I mean? The shows are a riot and I always have to be on high alert because I want everyone to feel safe. It's almost
like, you know how many girls get sexually assaulted at concerts, even stage diving, you know, and like crowd surfing. You've got girls that are getting their asses and their vaginas groped.
So Caroline, before every show, and this was amazing because I said, I want my show is a safe space. And I love that kind of Caroline implemented took it upon herself to speak to the security before every show. So they have a security meeting 30 minutes before doors. I'll do my meet and greet with her. We meet the people who are in the meet and greet, and then she will go and speak to security and say, this is what we watch for tonight. This is this, and this. And look the people on the barrier in the fucking eye and say, this is what's happening tonight. It's not like you're going to do your security job that you have done.
Yeah, this is how we do it, and I want to see you be present and follow through on what I'm asking you to do.
Absolutely, and I always get really angry if I see people on. But that's the thing; it's almost like having a team and building a world that everyone does reflects the idea of the brand of Youngblood, of the idea around it.
And they have to carry your principles, because if something fucked up happens at your show, it's on you. You know that's going to get out.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
So what about backstage after? Like, what about your after shows and your band? And do you like sit down with them?
It's very much family vibes in my show. You know what I'm saying? I think for the protection of it, it's like the family of the community is on stage. After we get off stage, it's almost like I go back to my team, my guitar techs. I've known him since I was 13. The crew are always so, like, I always make sure everyone's nice, and I just be like, yo, no one comes back after the show unless we know them, unless everyone's kind of comfortable with it. I always say that because the Youngblood show is a family, and then the Youngblood after show is a family too. And I think for me, I always like to kind of just go on my own.
Look, that's how a Strokes after show is as well. I mean, we just came back off of a 6-month tour, and my husband and I have 15-year-old twins. And my son was on tour for 8 weeks in Europe, all around America. And, you know, and I was like, I was so comforted to know that backstage it is family vibes, it's kids, it's family members, it's the closest, nearest and dearest. And I know that that is a safe space for my 15-year-old son to hang out in. But I see a lot of bands on tour when you go into their dressing room and you're like, oh my God, no, this is not okay. There's young girls in here. This is not okay.
I just think what it is it's setting a precedent, because people, the thing about it is it's like, when you go backstage into your thing, people can, every one of us is a human being, right? So if there's fucking 100 human beings backstage, they have an idea of everything they want it to be, and things can get miscommunicated.
Absolutely.
Whereas fishing, it's like, yo, this is who's backstage, because I don't want to bring someone backstage. I don't like hurting people. You know what I'm saying? I'm always very honest. I think honesty is the fucking best thing. It's like, backstage, this is my area, this is for my family, this is my blah, blah, blah. So then no one's going to be like, well, maybe this could happen, or maybe that could happen. And then it's like, no, it's always really implemented, because I want to respect people. I never want to give someone an idea of something that's going to happen and not fulfill that.
I had an idea of what could happen. I really wanted to get a kind of like coalition of managers and like Live Nation and people like that to create safe spaces at concerts where if girls have like had too much to drink or someone fucking roofied them or their friend is worried about them or whatever it is, they have a safe space to go to at concerts where they can be protected and they can make a phone call to someone to come get them or whatever it is they need. They can, that's, they feel in danger. I wanted to do that
beautiful thing where you go, where you go up to the bar as well and say that if you've been uncomfortable, what do you ask for? So, it's like Amanda, I think a bar thing you ask for.
That's my name.
That's what's crazy. No, but I think it's the same. I think it's something like that. You ask for a name at the bar, which means I am uncomfortable.
Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that beautiful?
That's the thing. And we're like literally, for example, everything means a lot to me at my shows. Like I put gender neutral toilets in venues that sometimes don't abide. And if they don't fucking do it, I ain't playing. You know what I mean? It's always those ideas that at my shows that like, if you ask for Amanda at the bar, you're uncomfortable or you've gone through something. If you don't identify with a gender, there's a place for you to go. I always want people to feel like I can be utterly myself, or utterly myself at a Youngblood gig.
I just really appreciate and recognize the work that you're doing to create a space of acceptance. All right, so we've talked about so many things. I've really enjoyed my time with you. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, man. I love that.